Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies.
Hello, and welcome to this latest in the OIES podcast series. My name is James Henderson, and I'm Director of the Energy Transition Research Initiative at OIES. Today, I'm joined by Anupama Sen, who's Deputy Director of Energy Transition and also a Senior Research Fellow at the Institute. We shall be discussing the theme of India and the future of gas and its energy economy in the context of the energy transition and also COP26. Anupama, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Jim. Great to be here.
Great. Well, let's start with a bit of background. What's the current state of the gas sector in India and how has it progressed over the past few years?
Well, I assume that this question refers to natural gas, which is the dominant form of gas used in India at the moment. The gas sector, the natural gas sector, is a relatively small proportion of the overall energy mix. So it's about 6.7% of total primary energy consumption. And it's eclipsed by coal, which is around 55% of the mix, followed by oil at around 30%. And then you have the remainder that's made up of nuclear, hydro, renewables, and other sources. So over the last two decades, the natural gas sector in India, it's been viewed with a lot of promise by domestic policymakers as well as by international gas market commentators. But if you look at the expectation versus the outcome, I would argue that it's historically underperformed. So there have been periods during which gas consumption has risen in India, but this has never really been sustained. And the rise has mainly been in response to changes in gas prices. So this has either been during periods of a rise in the production of price-regulated domestic gas, which is something that we saw happen briefly in 2010-2011, or during periods of a drop in the prices of liquefied natural gas imports, that's LNG imports, which we saw happen around 2015. And in both cases, consumption sort of peaked at 60 billion cubic meters, and then we saw a drop or a leveling off in consumption. Now, what's changed in the last few years is that the proportion of LNG imports bought on long-term contracts relative to the proportion bought on the spot market have nearly equalized. So they've gone from around 80% long-term contract to 20% spot a few years ago to nearly 50-50 now. And the recent price spike in gas prices may disrupt that trend if it's a prolonged spike, but that's been the general trend of the last few years. And in recent years, we've also seen a push by the government to really expand natural gas infrastructure, particularly in city gas distribution for households, so piped natural gas for cooking to replace LPG cylinders. And we've also seen it happen to a lesser extent in transport, so to the replacement of, let's say, diesel and petrol-based public transport with compressed natural gas or CNG. So in summary, the sector hasn't been stagnating, but it also hasn't been expanding at the pace that was predicted or expected.
Okay, thanks very much. That's great background. But obviously now we're moving into the energy transition and, India's got its own plans. But is gas seen as having a key role?
Well, I guess it depends on how you define energy transition plan. I wouldn't say that India has an energy transition plan mirroring anything along the lines of what Europe has or some other countries have. The focus has been very much on the rapid addition of renewables in the power sector and on reducing the emissions intensity of economic output. So the renewables capacity target in the power sector has been raised from 175 gigawatts of renewables by 2022 to 450 gigawatts by 2030, which is mainly going to come from solar. And that would take installed capacity of renewables, including hydro renewables, to around 60% of total power installed capacity by 2030. And the focus is also shifting and has been shifting for some time towards pushing the electrification of transport, including two and three wheelers and also first and last mile urban commercial freight. And more recently, India announced that it's also very interested in adopting a plan for green hydrogen, particularly in the manufacturing sector. So there's now a national green hydrogen mission. But whatever the transition pathway is, it's very likely that the policy preference will be for it to be aligned with India's economic and development goals. So, for instance, there will need to be alignment with the creation of local manufacturing supply chains and local employment needs. Now, the elephant in the room is, of course, the coal sector and whether and when coal can be phased out, and if so, how. And if you look at the other countries that have managed to reduce emissions, they've done so by decarbonizing the power sector. And a large part of that story has been about getting rid of coal from the power sector and switching to cleaner fuels. But it's very difficult to deal with coal in India. It's been very difficult to dislodge it from the power sector, as other fuels are just unable to compete in the merit order dispatch. And although renewables have fallen in cost, the intermittency issue may remain a challenge for the next few years. So, I wouldn't be able to say that gas is officially seen as having a key role in a grand energy transition plan. That hasn't been explicit in my view. For instance, gas wasn't really mentioned in India's INDC submission to the Paris Agreement, even though a few years after that, policymakers then stated that they were aiming to make India a gas-based economy. But having said that, natural gas could by default end up being a transition fuel if other technological options are not scaled up quickly. And if its use persists in India, then emissions from it would, of course, have to be abated through CCS. But the question here is, in the past, the gas sector has been very slow to pick up in India. So if there is a role for gas as a transition fuel, it's difficult to see how quickly this role could be fulfilled, given the historical inertia.
But there have been some targets set, if I'm not mistaken, for gas consumption, certainly in terms of share of the kind of overall energy demand. So what are the key targets that we should be looking out for gas consumption?
Yes, I mean, there has been a very clear target that's been set. And the main target is to increase the share of gas in the primary energy consumption mix to 15% by 2030, from around 6.7% at the moment, as I said earlier. And this basically implies that gas consumption would have to increase by around four times its current level, from around 55 or 56 BCM to over 200 BCM. We're talking 230 BCM, let's say, by 2030. So that's the key target. But just because there's a target, I wouldn't say the target is definitely going to be met. It's a very ambitious target, particularly with a carbon constraint on economic growth.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit more about the demand growth then and where it could come from. I mean, realistically, which sectors are we talking about? And in your view, if 230 BCM by 2030 is very much a stretch target, what do you think the outcome is more likely to be?
Well, I'd say, and I know we'll get into this later on as well, it's quite difficult basically to predict what the demand for gas will be in India. And if we look at historical data, that shows that there's been sort of an underwhelming performance rather than an overwhelming performance. But there is a small anchor consumer base for gas, which has shown some demand growth, regardless of international price movements, let's say. And that demand base is mainly in two sectors, in fertilizers and in industry. So if you look at fertilizers first, this is sort of a captive demand sector for gas, as most fertilizer manufacturing capacity in the country is gas-based. Farmers receive a subsidy on the retail price of the fertilizer product, so the sector can support higher prices. When prices increase, the government is able to pool the prices of lower-priced domestic gas with the price of higher-priced imported LNG and sell gas at an average price to the consumer in the fertilizer sector. And that's also supported growth in the sector. The agricultural sector was the only growth sector for gas demand during the months of the national lockdown that we had in 2020. And so that's a very clear indication that that sector tends to buck the trend. There are also plans to expand fertilizer manufacturing capacity. So I'd say that sector is a sort of a reliable, small and robust demand growth sector for gas. Coming to industry, which is the second sector where there's some potential for gas demand growth, particularly in refineries and petrochemicals. And this is supported by India's domestic demand for petroleum products, as well as its export capacity in petroleum products. It's the world's fourth largest exporter of refined products. And the government has also been supporting it, this sector, the growth in this sector domestically, because there's been a plan to replace traditional biomass with LPG in household use specifically, and you need natural gas to manufacture LPG. So that sector has been posting reasonable growth of about 5 to 6% year on year since 2016. That stalled a bit because of the economic slowdown in 2019, and then also because COVID hit. But it's also an indication that industry can support higher LNG import prices and therefore can support gas demand growth. I think it's worth also mentioning the city gas sector, where there's a drive to replace LPG cylinder usage in urban areas with piped natural gas for households and with CNG for transport. And that sector has been posting double-digit growth since 2017, but from a much lower base. So we're talking about growth rates of between 10 to 17% year on year. every year since about 2017, barring, of course, that period of the pandemic. And city gas distribution companies, very importantly, are able to pass on higher costs to end consumers because certain end consumers receive a subsidy. And therefore, it's possible for this sector to support gas demand growth. But here, of course, infrastructure is the main constraint to growth.
Okay, well, it's good you've brought up the whole question of constraints, because I guess there are a few we should touch on, and infrastructure is the first one. So, I mean, pipeline infrastructure, LNG importing infrastructure, distribution infrastructure, where are the key issues?
Yeah, infrastructure is very much the main constraint, and I would say it's all of those, and there are basically three things there. The first thing is that existing infrastructure, particularly pipeline network infrastructure in India, is not utilized to full capacity. The second thing is infrastructure is very much skewed towards industrialized areas which already use natural gas, rather than being extended to new areas and new consumers. And that's been a problem in the rollout of infrastructure in the past. And the third problem is any expansion of any significant kind of gas demand in the future would ultimately require new infrastructure across the board, including increasing the capacity of regasification terminals and also pipeline networks. So having said that, there has been a massive push in the last 2 years to expand natural gas infrastructure. The number of kilometers of pipelines is being doubled to nearly 30,000 kilometers. The capacity of regasification terminals is being expanded from just over 40 billion cubic meters. And the target is 90 billion cubic meters by 2025. And a number of auctions have also been conducted for the construction of city gas distribution networks. And these auctions have cumulatively covered just over 50% of India's geographical area, and reportedly about 70% of its population. But there are two big questions here. First is whether all of this infrastructure can be built within deadline without delays. And secondly, whether investments can be sustained in that infrastructure and in the use of natural gas, given its status as a transition fuel and given the issue around stranded capacity in the event of a clear and clearly enforced climate change mitigation target in the future.
Okay, so that's one. I mean, the other, I hesitate to call it a constraint, but I kind of what India is really known for in terms of the slightly bizarre structure of it is its pricing, both in terms of how it derives prices, but also the fact that it's a very price-sensitive market. So how does that pricing kind of fact either undermine or encourage gas demand growth in India?
So that's a great question, Jim. And domestic gas prices in India are fixed for 6 month periods. And they are fixed on the basis of a formula, which is the volume weighted average price of Henry Hub, NBP, the Russian domestic gas price, and the Alberta reference price, four very different sorts of benchmarks. And there's a lag, of course. And the lag means that the effects of international price movements take time to come through. Now, this benchmark has yielded very low gas prices, too low to incentivize domestic gas production. So domestic prices were below $2 per MMBTU for several months. They've just gone up to around $3 per MMBTU. And they're likely to rise higher in the next revision because of this lag and the effect of international gas prices coming through. In order for natural gas uptake to increase in the economy, the price of gas needs to reflect in some way the prices of the substitutes that it's meant to be replacing. And I'd argue that the current domestic gas formula doesn't really do that. But in 2016, the government introduced what it called a ceiling price for gas production from deep water fields, which was linked to the prices of alternative fuels, including fuel, oil, coal, naphtha, and imported LNG. So that's a more accurate linkage. And that price is likely to go up in the next 6 months because of the lag. And that could incentivize domestic production. But more importantly, that sort of a mechanism provides a kind of structural starting point for a pricing mechanism, which could then be adjusted for factors such as fuel efficiencies or capital costs or even externalities, which in my view is very important for India.
And what about you mentioned subsidies earlier, the sort of the two-tiered demand structure, the kind of subsidized and non-subsidized parts of the economy. Are we going to see that resolved anytime soon, or is that just a structural impasse, if you like?
So the two-tiered structure of demand basically refers to the fact that all of the domestic gas that's produced in India is first allocated by the government to a tier one group of priority sectors, which includes fertilizer plants. Well, first it includes city gas for households and transportation. Then it includes fertilizer plants, and then it includes gas-based power plants. Then whatever's left over is released into a more general second tier of consumers, which includes industrial consumers, for instance. And then you have any shortfalls made up by importing LNG, and the tier two consumer group is able to afford a higher priced gas, whereas the tier one consumer group isn't. So the two-tiered structure of demand basically indicates that it's impossible to make any sort of accurate assessment of India's gas demand because there's no clear price signal. And there's also some overlap between the two tiers, as both of the consumers in both tiers use a mix of domestic gas and LNG. And there are debates over whether the tiers might be merged at some point, but there's no indication of this happening in the near future. India did set up a gas exchange last year to try and stimulate some sort of price signal, but that's very, very early stages, and it's trading very limited volumes at the moment, and it's mostly trading LNG. So I think that that's a structural issue which is unlikely to be resolved anytime soon, because of the issue of affordability for certain consumers of gas.
And you mentioned the impact of prices on production earlier. I mean, we had sort of a peak back in the mid 2010s, and now been a decline. So what's happening to production at the moment, and what are the prospects looking forward?
So domestic production, as you know, peaked in it reached a peak in 2010 or 2011, which is when production started from the Eastern Offshore KG-D6 field, and then it's been in decline since 2012. Since then, we've seen a lot of change in government policy across pricing, marketing, and even in pipeline tariffs. And with rising LNG prices pushing up those domestic ceiling prices that I talked about, it's likely that that will provide a more incentive for domestic producers to increase production. We could see ceiling prices increase, let's say, in the second quarter, the first or second quarter of 2022. There are certain discoveries that are also coming on stream. For instance, the Reliance and BP Deepwater KG-D6 fields are bringing some gas into the market. ONGC and Vedanta are also looking at bringing certain discoveries online. We could see domestic production increase over the next 2 to 3 years, maybe adding around 10 BCM or so by 2023. But again, India will continue to need LNG imports as well.
Okay, I mean, just coming back to the overall picture, if you like, we've talked about demand and supply now. I mean, the scenarios looking forward are very, very wide. And you've already expressed some concern about making any forecasts. But what do you take from the fact that the outlook is so varied? And are you personally an optimist or a pessimist about the future role of gas in India?
So I'd like to reframe your question. I think you're asking me what is the future demand for gas for India, which is kind of the future demand for gas in India. So I'd say if you stack all of the scenarios published by companies, multilateral agencies and think tanks for gas demand in India, and there are about over 30 different scenarios dealing with different paces of the energy transition, these scenarios, which are long-term scenarios, range from a low of about 100 billion cubic meters to a high of over 350 billion cubic meters by 2050. So that shows you the level, the range of uncertainty and the range of risk. Now, that's not a new development, and we've highlighted this wide range in nearly all of our previous OIS papers. And we've said that the reason for this range is because until very recently, the Indian gas market was largely a centrally planned gas market, rather than one in which demand and supply is driven purely by price signals. So conventionally, the process of central planning began with a quantity based on likely domestic production. That quantity was then allocated by policymakers among different users and then priced by planners. And in the event of a shortage, the price was unlikely to be revised, but the quantity could be increased in other ways, for example, through imports. And therefore, planned forecasts, the official ones at least, used to be based on some key assumptions around availability. In the official supply forecasts, it used to be assumed that forecast supply would be utilized. Similarly, in official demand forecasts, it was assumed that prices would be set at levels that allowed gas to compete with alternative fuels, and that the infrastructure networks necessary for delivery of gas would exist. Now, this has changed over the last decade. The sector has gradually become more market-oriented as a result of changes in policy and pricing, but elements of central planning still very much exist. And the example, of course, is the two-tiered structure of demand. So that's why it's so difficult to arrive at an accurate assessment of the role of gas in India. So I would argue that I've never been an optimist about natural gas demand in India. But regardless of that context, given the carbon constraint on economic growth, even though the pathways to net zero or zero emissions will be different for different developing countries, including India, it's clear that there is unlikely to be any long-term role for unabated fossil fuels in India, including gas.
So the other thing we talk about, Anupama, is renewables. And because there's been, as you mentioned already, some fairly aggressive renewables targets. But I guess one question is whether they'll be achieved or not, and whether therefore whether there's a role for gas in filling in what renewables can't do, or whether renewables are a real threat to gas, because if these targets are met, then there's not really a role for gas in future. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's a good question, Jim. So the renewables targets are very ambitious. If I talked about the 175 gigawatts by 2022 target, of which 100 gigawatts has been sort of contracted for or put in place. And I would argue that renewables have already bypassed gas in certain sectors like the power sector, even though the targets haven't been met. So the power sector has a lot of stranded or idle gas-based power capacity. And that's to do with the fact that there's a lot of coal in there and gas cannot compete with coal in the merit order dispatch. And ironically, of course, I've mentioned that other countries that have managed to decarbonize have done so through decarbonizing their power sectors. And that's been done through moving away from coal towards gas or towards renewables. But we don't see this happening in India, although at some point, India will run into the issue of renewable intermittency. And then we'll have to see what technological and scalable solutions can be used to deal with that. There are other sectors which are hard to decarbonize and where coal is heavily used, for instance, industry. Where there could be a potential role for gas and for decarbonized gas in the transition period. We've seen this at a localized level. So, for instance, there's been a lot written about small and medium-sized enterprises which are involved in brick-making clusters, for instance, that have switched away from coal and adopted gas for their energy use. And that's for reasons of to do with reducing local air pollution, for instance. So that's at a sort of regional level. So I would argue that it's not a question of gas competing with renewables or of renewables being a threat to gas. It's basically looking at the history of the gas sector in India, looking at the sort of marginal role that gas has within the overall energy mix. And then considering whether during the energy transition, there are pockets which can be met pockets of energy demand which can be fulfilled by gas and by decarbonized gas to enable the transition.
Okay. I mean, as we talk about that then, I guess we're coming, well, we're already in on November, here we are on November the 1st and COP26 has started. You've mentioned that India's been under quite a lot of pressure to address the issue of coal production and consumption. You know, how is it reacting to that pressure? I mean, from what you've suggested so far, gas isn't necessarily seen as having a great role in switching as it has been in China, for example. Is that the right interpretation?
Yeah. So I think in terms of switching away from coal again, coal is mainly consumed in the power sector and some in industry. And coal to gas switching, as I've said, is uneconomical in India's power sector unless it's disincentivized, for instance, through a carbon price. OIS published a study around 3 years ago, I think, which estimated that at a gas price of around $5.50 per million British thermal units, which was at the time stated to be a reasonable price for gas in the power sector, the sort of carbon price or the tax per ton of coal production would have to be something like $30 to $40 per ton. And that would be to sort of incentivize coal to gas switching. Now, this would have required electricity tariffs to increase by nearly 30% or subsidies to increase by an equivalent amount. However, some researchers have estimated that a much higher carbon price would be needed for gas to be able to compete with coal. And that brings in, again, the issue of affordability. So as a result, much of gas-based power capacity is idle or stranded in the power sector in India. Now, the IEA has estimated that by 2040, although renewables will become the largest proportion of India's electricity generation, coal will still provide the second largest share and the role of natural gas will be minimal. And if you do substitute coal with gas, you end up with the same problem in the long term with regards to abating emissions from fossil fuels. It's interesting because there was a recent report, I think, in the FT, which focused on coal, and it stated that coal-fired power plants are worth about $60 billion are under construction in India. And this sort of brings us to the current dichotomy where there's a lot of emphasis on renewable targets and adding renewables in India, but the subject of what to do with coal has been largely avoided. And at the same time, coal is embedded across the economy. So the sector provides a lot of revenues to the Indian exchequer through dividends from state-owned companies. And it also supports other sectors in the economy. So, for instance, Indian Railways utilizes the revenues from transportation of coal to subsidize its passenger fares. And we've also seen India auctioning coal mines to try and encourage private sector investment. So it's a very difficult sector to deal with, and it remains to be seen really what sort of agreement India will arrive at with the international community at COP26 when it comes to coal.
And you know, most other countries now, certainly all the big emitters, have come to COP26 with some form of net zero target. I mean, of varying levels of credibility, admittedly. India has not. Do you expect there to be any announcement on a net zero target? And if not, what does that mean?
As you said, all the indications from India are that setting a net zero target without really addressing the issue of the remaining carbon budget and the apportionment of the remaining carbon budget isn't a useful exercise from the point of view of Indian policymakers. But at the same time, setting a net zero target does something, right? It provides a policy signal. There have been some studies published by research institutions and think tanks in India which suggest that even if a net zero target were to be set, it could be set somewhere around 2060 or 2065. I think some have even said by 2070. But even if you set a net zero target that far into the future, it means that emissions would still have to peak about a decade or two decades before that, let's say by 2040, 2045, in order for the target to be met. I hesitate to make any predictions, but I think that this issue of historical responsibility and how to apportion the remaining carbon budget will be a kind of sticking point in the talks.
And so, I mean, from the sound of that, you know, India's coming to COP26 with a fairly, hesitate to say aggressive, but certainly assertive position on its role in the energy transition. Is it also demanding financial support from developed countries in order to help it make any switch that it decides to make?
Yeah, I mean, India's environment minister recently made a statement. He said that at COP26, India was going to emphasize climate justice and ask wealthier nations to aid in technology and finance transfers, which were needed to help developing countries deal with climate change mitigation. And I think that line will very much be taken at the COP meeting as well. But I think there's also been an interesting change in India's stance. So if we go back before 2009, there was this kind of perceived dichotomy between addressing climate change and addressing economic development. And that basically transformed, it changed, and climate and development were seen as congruous with each other. And it was in the interest of India and other developing countries to address climate change mitigation as the impact on their citizens or on India's citizens would be disproportionate compared to, let's say, the developed world. So there has been a change, but now the sort of the debate has moved to not whether climate change mitigation should be undertaken, but who should pay for it. And I think that's where the Indian stance is, the issue around historical responsibility sort of the call for developed countries to go net negative rather than net zero, so that developing countries can then set net zero targets.
Okay, well, that's very interesting. Well, obviously, we'll see what happens in Glasgow over the next couple of weeks. But I certainly think the debate around India as well as the debate around China is going to be a critical one. Well, look, we've come to the end of our time. Thank you very much, Annie Palmer, for your thoughts on the future of gas in India in the context of the energy transition. As you said, a lot of varied outlooks, but I think it's a pretty clear message from you that you're on the less optimistic side, but still a future role for gas. If you want to see more of Annie Palmer's views, please go to our website, where you can also find our energy transition research under a tab for our new energy transition initiative. And that is all at www.oxfordenergy.org. But with that, thank you very much indeed for listening. Stay healthy and goodbye.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. You can find other podcasts, as well as all our written research, on our website at www.oxfordenergy.org. If you would like more details about our oil, gas, electricity or China programmes, then please contact us at information@oxfordenergy.org.